You are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Afternoon, everyone. Hello. How are you? Hopefully, you're enjoying your day. This is Reggie Hammond with the Finding Your Forte show. We are really, really excited to be back with you after a bit of a hiatus. We are all now relaxed, decompressed. We are recharged and ready to bring you a new series of shows and healthy, vibrant conversations. And the one that I have for you today, boy, oh boy, this one has been a long time coming. So this is our continuation of our Power Lunch Hour series. Hopefully you've had a chance to grab your sandwich and are tuning in with us. If you would like to join our conversation live, feel free to do so. Make a note of this number. Grab your pen. The number is 347-324-5246. And I've had to withhold the suspense for some time now, but I'm ready to finally share with you that our guest for today is a conversation that I've been looking forward to having for at least a year, if not longer. We have on our show today, our guest is Deirdre Glover. She is founder and CEO of Concert Consulting, and she is one of the preeminent change management navigation journey guide consultants, specifically here in Atlanta, but certainly her reach goes beyond and abroad and other beyond those boundaries. And so, as I prepare to introduce her here in a loud, I'm sure she's giggling because I've been so wanting to have this conversation. Deirdre is one of the folks that if you have the experience of having a conversation with her, you just kind of you just feel the levity and the energy level of a conversation just at heightened levels. And so I have been fascinated with the prospect of having that conversation come to the table. So Deirdre, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Reggie. I'm really excited to be here with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So one of the things that I am most excited to allow Deirdre to be able to share with us in this conversation is a good bit about her and her work and the way that she's collecting her clients. But she has also had the opportunity to journey through the Finding Your Forte experience, and through that conversation, as it's evolved, she and I have had a chance to, you know, get better insights on the journey she's been traveling for herself and for the work that she feels called to do in terms of the way that she leads her clients. So, Deirdre, I am, you know, I could probably make a half-hearted attempt at making an introduction to you, but I'm so intimidated by not doing it justice. So, I would really like it if you would just take a moment and, you know, introduce yourself to our listeners in a way that we can, you know, start this conversation.
Okay, happy to do it. Thank you so much, Reggie, for just such a thoughtful introduction. I'm really excited to be here with you. And and take this journey in conversation as well. Hi, everyone. As Reggie mentioned, I'm Deidre Glover. My company Concert is headquartered here in Atlanta. We do have a presence throughout the Southeast and a bit up the Eastern Seaboard, with a bit of a presence out west as well. As I completed my forte and my path to where I am today, I will begin with what I see as a huge part of my life purpose. I feel that one of the key reasons that I am here is to help people get unstuck in the places in which they find themselves stuck, and also to help people, teams, and companies really realize, access, and go after their true potential with abandon, and do so courageously. And as we all know, a big part of the experience in this human life is navigating change. We don't get to choose what happens, but we absolutely have the opportunity to choose how we respond. And I get the immense pleasure to live in the space of helping people shape how they respond and navigate change in their lives. And I feel quite excited and blessed to be able to do that. And my company does that on a larger scale. And I like to describe what we do in the most simple terms that we can, and that is we help leaders drive sustainable change in their companies, in their teams, and in themselves.
You know, I am having, been shoulder to shoulder to you as we gone through that experience and heard some of the phenomenal stories of some of the change that you've had the opportunity to navigate. I've really been excited to watch that evolve and watch your kind of the clarity. And, sometimes when we have these conversations with people, it's about discovery of purpose. I don't think, I can't quite put the discovery flag down on our work, but it certainly had some affirmation echoes and sentiments to it. And, one of the things I found really inspiring about your work is the extent to which you go to what I remember the phrase we used to talk about being your role as facilitating breakthroughs. Mm-hmm. And how many people, both on an individual level and in a teams and in organizations, to connect to your point, are stuck in a lot of ways, and how your work, helps people navigate through that. When you hear that kind of language, and when you think about, the things that are making you chuckle when you even as we talk about that, what's kind of the common denominator that you see in the work that you're doing around this whole notion of facilitating breakthroughs?
The common thread that we're seeing is it's sort of multifold. One is we know that we're all so busy in this life.
Right.
There are a few people mm-hmm. with just this extra wealth of time that is just sitting on the side untapped, right?
There are some.
Exactly. They're out there. Okay. Please call us. No, but they're out there. But most exactly, we can help. But there are some. We're trying to help people be very intentional within a sea of busyness. And busyness can sometimes, and is often fully externally defined, where we all have everybody else's expectations on our plate. And I was talking with a coaching client pretty recently about just the stark difference between responding to life and reacting. And the key difference between the two is your intention has a place at the table. You get to respond when you have clarity and you have the ability to say, okay, wait a minute. Yep, this is the impetus out there. This is the catalyst of saying, hey, do something. But let me take a minute and flow this through my lens that I said, okay, this is a life well lived for me. Let me flow this through and have that inform what I do versus simply reacting because the impetus says do so right now. And so I think that sea of busyness is a common thread. But the tendency to default to a reaction versus a response is very, very present as well.
Yeah, one of the things that I find fascinating about the work that you do, through my own experience, driving change, just consulting usually from a process or strategy perspective, I always have a healthy regard for folks like yourself that not only focus on people, but are really good at it. And, it's a fascinating kind of dilemma that people just by nature are so resistant to change and really like to kind of settle into comfort and, maybe cynically complacency,
mm-hmm.
Change becomes that six-letter word that they are not always eager to embrace. And so to be able to have a bold and courageous presence within the work that you do to be able to help people navigate change almost requires you to be a practitioner that beyond just putting tasks on a project plan and saying execute it, it's more art. It seems to be more art than science. It seems to be, the really gifted change practitioners can really manage moving a ship with all of the things that we think are critical to change being more dials on a dashboard. Has that been something that resonates with you as you've seen the role you play with organizations? Does that sometimes reflect the way that you engage the stakeholders that you're working with?
Oh, absolutely, Reggie. We look to be a differentiator in that we look to engage the whole brain in the process. All change, and a lot of our work is built on a fundamental expectation that all change begins with a single human being deciding to do something differently, whether that's stop doing something the old way, start doing the new. And I'm talking about in the corporate environment, personally, you name it. And I think you're right. Coming from a consulting background, as well, a lot of change can be there. I noticed early on in my career that it can be an assumption that simply because we put it on the plan means that it will happen.
Right.
And how often
that's a rookie assumption, isn't it?
it is indeed that. I think it might be a rookie assumption. So the rookies. So with that, that assumption becomes really critical downstream, because it assumes that simply because we have said what's happening means that employees are ready to embrace and adopt and do something different. And that's not the case. We very much think it's important to not only have clarity in what's changing and to be really crystal clear, not, hey, we're right. implementing a tool. Well, why are we doing that? What is it going to do to not only help the company, but help me as an individual and my team be successful, but what specifically do you need to do differently? And as a leader, how do I move things out of the way to help you then adopt and navigate that? So it is very much a human, whole-brained experience in that the project plan and all the structure on that left brain side, but it's also a head and heart thing too. We bring,
right.
Contrary to popular notions, we bring our human selves to work, And
right.
so the same
right.
things
right.
we need to navigate life, we need to navigate our work.
It's really interesting because, all that you shared, I think, is pretty commonly understood amongst our change agent, colleague population in that community. However, there are folks in the broader community, maybe even business or beyond, that hear, some of the context for what we're sharing. They're not really able to connect to it in really tangible ways. So I was wondering if you would mind sharing, give us a sense of a glimpse of the change, maybe give us a day in the life of, the work that you have in flight, or maybe not this day or some other day, that kind of gives us a sense for the kind of work that you are leading, facilitating, navigating, being a participant of? You know, give us a sense for like what some of that work looks like.
Sure, I'd be glad to. Something that you touched on, I think, is really critical there, and that is, as much as it's important to bring the human parts in, this is not at all limited to a right-brained exercise, because change management or navigation of transformation can sometimes be relegated to this sort of ethereal, esoteric exercise. And what I try to do in our pursuit of making this a whole-brained exercise is get down to brass tacks of the return on investment of this thing. Why should companies and people spend money on it? And I'll tell you, and I'll use that lens to inform the story that I share. when a company chooses to invest in responding to a change, because the change may not have been their idea, the market may shift, a competitor may acquire some part of them, you name it, but a company makes a decision to do something different, change a process, implement a system, et cetera. There comes a point in the project, and for those of us who have done this type of work for a long time, or even if you've been adjacent to it, you should understand a little bit more about what I'm describing here, in that sometimes the project, you can sometimes lose the forest for the trees and say,
right,
okay, we're in the weeds, we're implementing a system, we have a beautiful project plan, we have all the teams ready to go. When it comes down to going live, in the sense that we bring our human selves to work, we can become really jaded and begin to focus on just getting it done, getting it implemented, just get the change out there. But people are no more prepared or engaged or ready to do anything different. So what we have to do then is say, look, client, you've taken the time to invest these dollars. Do you want to merely define success by the fact that your project is complete, or is it complete when it's ready for you to be poised to realize the value that informed you approving the dollars? That's what change management affects, that delta, because most projects, they get done. Very few just die on the vine. But what we do is help things not just become that thing in a binder that you did back in 2015, and it is instead an actual change that's showing up in how your folks, show up for themselves and for their teams and for the company. So the nature of the work really can mean the difference between you actually realizing results as opposed to simply having paid the money to implement something.
That's really powerful, and I think that's where you see your work begin to, you know, rear its head on the bottom line in terms of having an impact on, you know, in the marketplace and on, you know, in profitability and benefits that show up as business outcomes that leaders really care about.
And to your question about just some examples of day in the life of the type of work, one of the things I really love, one of the many things I love about this work, is the fact that the levers that it takes to navigate change, they are pretty much the same across industries, across projects, et cetera. So we have the true ability to operate in some really neat and diverse spaces. So our projects can range anywhere from a client implementing a piece of technology. We help them with shaping the vision and the why, you know, with Simon Sinek's work, Start With Why. I think starting with why is so critical for our change work, because you're not just talking about what's changing, but why, because whys help people shift, right?
Right.
So it can be anything from that to an organization redesigning, a brand new company launching and needing to get clear about how they want to communicate who they are. We sometimes are brought in for projects that are already in flight that have struggled with clarity around communication. Adoption readiness, you know, how ready is your organization for this change that you've spent months and months getting ready. But then also I love to say at the end of a project, the project team feels like it's an end, but the rest of the organization, it's a beginning. So the change team really stands in the gap there to help it not be, whew, we're done, check the box, but really take that energy into the organization who's really starting to engage in the change for the first time and make sure that people are well positioned to navigate it.
You know, that I think that's really powerful. And I think, you know, one thing that might help this conversation is if, you know, is there through the course of your work, I'm sure there's some, you sometimes have experiences that, you know, make you chuckle or that, you know, that you find really fascinating in terms of the way these levers of change played out in a specific situation. Take us into, you know, deep into the experience of maybe perhaps an individual client that was a stakeholder in some way in work. It could be the key leader that you were working with, or maybe it was someone that's impacted, and you watched these change levers and whatever their readings, you know, show a shift, a paradigm, you know, or heightened priority or something that made it, you know, possible for them to be impacted in a way that was productive for the initiative you were working on.
Sure, absolutely. I'd be happy to do that. Let's take, since we've talked a fair amount about implementation, I'll take one of those. This was a client that was implementing a new ERP solution. It was going to impact a pretty sizable chunk of the organization. And what we found, and we find this in a lot of instances, those that have been change practitioners over the course of a career, a lot of people can relegate it to, well, we simply need someone to join the project to send a few emails and to maybe design some training. Stand up and, you know, train people on which button to push in the new environment. While, yes, those things may be a part of the equation, what I find is change teams are often embedded with the project team, and our lens is different. So we're seeing places where people are connected to the change. We're seeing places where people are disconnected. Over the course of my career, one of my favorite things to do, and it's not an easy thing, that might be one of the reasons it's my favorite, is to stand up in front of a group of people who are not exactly happy about a change that's coming. And what I work to do is lean into the chaos, because we can't affect what we won't say, right? So let's, you know, I call them truth sessions. So let's get into a room, get into the arena and talk about what's coming. What are we really looking forward to? But what are we looking forward to least? What is that thing? You know, one of my favorite things is there's usually someone in the room who says, you know, we tried this thing 6 years ago. It didn't work. Why are we doing it again? Why are we doing this now? It's never going to stick. Culturally, this is not who we are. And during those truth sessions, a big part of the exercise is acknowledging the pink elephants in the room. Lean into them. Invite them to the table. Give them a name. And my favorite thing in the course of a project is to give those pink elephants a name so that we can all refer back to it. Like, okay, where's Fred showing up? What's going on? And right. What we've recognized over the course of this time, Reggie, is that I do believe that as human beings, we don't always have a need to be right, but it's a part of our DNA to want to be heard and seen. So a big part of our work in the midst of these changes is to help people, is to help them find their voice and raise it in an open way so that we are able to drive a change that is sustainable and that we can all touch, you know, believe in. So we play a role in doing that.
Yeah, that, you know, now our listeners are getting a glimpse at why I really wanted you in this conversation. You know, I just got to bookmark that for a second and just applaud the colorful and, you know, graphic imagery when you're just simply making a point. Like, I literally saw you standing in the middle of the Coliseum with bulls coming, coming from the corner.
Bring it.
saying olay as they come to bring you tissue after issue. And
let's do
just
it.
To know, And one of the reason I like that imagery is because it speaks volumes of the confidence and the assuredness that you're in a place that you're purposed to be. That is not a place to be if you are unsure of it, or if you're fearful of it, or if you're not prepared for it even. And so the notion that you seek out those opportunities to lean into the chaos of stakeholders that you're trying to take along a journey, I think speaks about, you know, just, well, I'm just having a personal moment there. Just excited for whatever stakeholders you're having the opportunity to engage. So thank you for sharing that. That was really helpful.
I appreciate that resonates with you, because, you know, at the end of the day, leadership takes courage. And,
yeah, absolutely.
And that's what we're called for. I love it.
And one of the things that we, you know, were able to shift gears to while we were on the path in terms of pursuing your purpose was to begin to affirm and, take to market in a more compelling way the work that some of the really fascinating work that you're doing in the speaker realm. And I just remember a conversation that you and I last had probably a couple of months ago on some of the speaking engagements that you had teed up. One of the things that the more I've come to get exposure to speakers and kind of like what makes them tick is just the appreciation for the range of styles of speaking, and having seen you do your thing with audiences and to leave them, you know, moved to, if I had to put it in a word, both in, you know, the conference that you were one of the keynote speakers for, and then for some of our client teams that, you know, I have had the opportunity to bring you in. They all walk away with kind, warm things to say about the way that you impacted them in their conversations. And so I think that, you know, while you were just sharing it in a very impromptu way, that you're, that truly is a gift of yours. And, maybe you can share a little bit, you know, about, like, I think when I checked in with you a couple of months ago, you had things coming up that were, you know, just on the horizon. But, you know, is there more speaking in the future on the horizon for you, or is there other things on the timeline that you're excited about?
Oh, sure. Well, first and foremost, thank you so much for that, Reggie. I greatly appreciate that. And part of one of those levers that we've talked about, and I know we'll dive deeper into exactly what they are, but one big part of that mix is communication and the ability to connect and communicate. And that's always been something that I have a heart and a passion for. I genuinely want to embrace any opportunity to connect with another human being. And whether that's ideally beginning with listening and understanding what's important to them, and then in the most clear way that I can convey what's important to me and how open and ready I am to help them in any way I can. And so taking the time to embrace opportunities to, whether it's a speaking engagement or facilitate, you name it, my goal is to really create an experience, and it gets to be, I get the ability to be blessed by an experience with them as well. And I look at any opportunity, any speaking engagement opportunity as a conversation with individuals. I think since we last spoke, I was a part of a conference, a symposium up in Nashville, and a lot of legal professionals around the country. And I had the ability to spend some time talking to them about navigating change within their industry. And it was just one of the best experiences in recent times, because we were able to talk about the things that are hard about navigating change, but also the things that we have a heart for that often get lost in the shuffle. And I love it because it's a mix of not only kind of one-to-many standing up in front of the group and speaking, but also in a facilitated session in a room, you know, breaking some things out. I'm a consultant, so I love a whiteboard and a, and a flip chart. So let's get in there, break this thing open, lift the hood on it. So we definitely see more of those opportunities in the future as we continue to build our name in the industry and create places for the market to get to know who we are.
Well, I, you know, thank you for sharing that. And I think, you know, with my not so subtle plug, I would definitely invite listeners that would love to have you share your perspectives. maybe we can start a series, you know, stories from the bull ring, or from,
I like that.
Or to be able to share your experiences as speaker facilitators for work that leaders and organizations need to get through. There are a few more gifted than Deirdre, and I would definitely welcome you to the conversation to learn more about that. But I think that's really helpful as a It at least sets up the conversation that we're having at a good, you know, kind of breaking point that we'll, let's put a bookmark in it and, you know, give our listeners a little bit of a opportunity to, you know, take a brief break. And when we come back, we will open up the context a bit, Deirdre, to talk about purpose and pursuit within workforces and organizations and where the future might be heading in that way. But for now, let's take a quick break and we will be right. We will be back just after we hear from our sponsor.
Great. Thank you.
Every hiring manager knows that a company is only as good as the people it's made from. So where do you find the best people? That may surprise you.
Meet the grads of life. Young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
This is talent worth knowing about.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Okay, and we're back, and we are continuing our conversation with Deirdre Glover. The first half of the conversation, we've been able to learn a bit more about the work that she's doing and some of the clients that she's been able to help navigate and impact through their journeys of change. And now I'm just really going to, you know, allow her to, you know, kind of open up the conversation a bit more. And one of the things I really highly regard about Deirdre is how thoughtful she is about the workplaces we're in and how they're evolving and how we can, in really intentional ways, drive the kind of change that we want to be able to see in the world. And so, Deirdre, you and I, we share in common the priority of people being able to connect to their purpose and their work in a meaningful way. I really want to just start, you know, kind of start to talk about how do you see, you know, so that was something that you made a priority for yourself, but how do you see that, how do you see our workforce evolving with purpose in mind? Like, in what ways do you foresee that being able to, you know, be a priority for the marketplaces in which we operate?
Sure. The first thing that comes to mind there, Reggie, is we all know that there's a lot of discussion about millennials and cross-generational dimensions of the workforce, as many different generations are now arriving in the workplace at the same time and working to connect. And I think millennials are really introducing some interesting clarity around purpose far earlier than many of us had in our careers prior to now. It's not to say that it was completely absent, but it's much more prevalent, I've seen. That doesn't mean that they aren't interested in learning. It means that they really want to know, who are they connected to as a company? They know that life is bigger than work. So work is not a full-on identity play. It's really, I enjoy this type of work. I want to grow in doing that. What company is going to A, see me and B, hear me and be willing to, help me along that journey as I help them? And when someone who's talented arrives in your space with that sort of clarity of purpose, how do you not choose to harness that? And you can only harness it if you take the time to hear it and listen. By the same time, I think that there's been this awakening in whether it's boomers or Gen Xers or Yers who are seeing the way the world is changing and saying, maybe work as my pure identity and making it a tactical play versus, hey, work is a part of my life well lived. Wait a minute. Maybe working 80 hours just because with a little show it may not be my only path,
Exactly.
So I think it's not limited to millennials, but I think that the awareness of how differently they're showing up in the workplace may have started it, but boy, is it a growing notion, and the great work that you're doing is playing no small part in that.
It's really interesting because first of all, thank you for that. I think that it definitely is an evolution, and while I can't say that, there was a really smart group of millennials that got together and said, intentionally, we're going to impact the workplace by making them, forcing them to tap into our purpose. While I can't say that it was intentional in that way, I think it was a perfect storm in some ways. I think as, a lot of millennials watched friends and family work through what they perceived as disloyalty on the part of companies and layoffs and reorgs, and they began to start to connect value to something much more compelling. You can't necessarily, like where it used to decades ago, you'd be able to kind of connect with a company and ride it out to pension plans, and that would be the center of your existence, and then that's what kind of preempted the 80-hour work week and dead blasted, you better do it if you want to prove your worth to this company. After enough companies kind of detached that level of loyalty, then eventually millennials began to insist, well, that's really not the meaning of why I'm connecting to my work. So if that's not it, what is it? And I have to say that I've been able to watch the evolution. 8 years ago, I started talking about connecting purpose and work and teams, and every other person looked at me like I had three heads. Now it's kind of evolved to at least the topic is a really aspirational one, and it is one that is becoming more and more welcome to leaders as something to consider in the way that they develop their talent and their leaders. But I often caution them that, particularly the ones that have been a little bit resistant around it, is that, it's discretionary now. Now it is a thing that you can decide if you want to opt into. But it will not be discretionary for long. And that's the shifting in the workforce that's requiring leaders to be good at tapping into, the work that they're called to do. Deloitte has a really good study in this space. It basically says millennials have concluded engage millennials with meaningful work or watch them walk out the door. And companies are just not going to have – they're not going to be able to sustain a workforce if they're not able to do that.
It's interesting. When I was in my senior year in undergrad, and that's granted been a while now, but even then I remember this wonderful article in Fortune magazine, and on the front cover it just said "You Inc." And I didn't think of it as an entrepreneurial play, but as I read the main article, it was about this notion of, hey, you're about to graduate, and please know that the gold watch is not there. You're going to change jobs X number of times. You're going to do, and then of course I proceeded to buck the trend and join a company and be there for 10 years. But I did so through that lens, and so I always tried to challenge myself to look at my skills and my identity as a set of skills that I was brokering to a company, and that opened up the modes for me to think about my purpose and what I wanted, because my identity wasn't wrapped up purely in that one dimensional, hey, work the 80-hour week and show that you're, you know, this or bust, you know. And while I did cover that sort of ground in my career when you're paying dues and the like, I am excited to not have been boxed into that as one way of seeing my career. And I couldn't agree with you more. The discretionary tag is going to be going away soon. So the ways that companies prepare for that are just really going to be critical and game changing for them in the future.
And do you feel like are you finding more teams and leaders open to engaging, you know, procuring that level of connectedness to their people, or are you still seeing, you know, there's a healthy amount of resistance or cynicism around it?
Frankly, I'm still seeing a bit of both. I definitely see the minds opening to the opportunity. The challenge that we're directly looking to affect, though, is even those who have the open mind don't necessarily know how to do it. So what we do, and that's one of the ways that I describe to my mom what I do, I say, well, one of the things we do is shape how change happens. You know, how do you begin to do that new thing that you read the article about? Because reading the article alone is not enough, right?
And I'll
take those clients all day, because what we do is roll up our sleeves and say, how do you authentically integrate purpose-driven work into your culture? That's a different conversation. Yeah. It's different for everybody. But what it takes to do it and what those levers are, we have a really good starting place to help a client with doing that. So I'm seeing a little bit of both. I will say probably in more recent years, the abject resistance to it, thankfully, is on the decline, because for a while that was it. It was sort of we do not buy that. We're fresh out and we don't want any more.
right. You know, it's as that landscape has evolved, you know, and the role that you play. I loved your language around, you know, the whole brain. You know, you think through change through the whole brain and making sure that you are sensitive to and connected to intentionally to the head and the heart. You know, I think what I've often seen be the case is that key leaders that you work with get it and they aspire to be able to connect with it in themselves. And then they, you know, want to be able to see their teams embrace it, and so they, you know, kind of share that same experience with their teams, maybe in, you know, different ways, in different channels, but it certainly is becoming more and more part of the conversation in the workplace, which is, to me, as this, you know, guy that's kind of committed to this mission of getting the world on purpose and with impact, it is really encouraging to see that happen.
I bet it is. I will say the exploration of intersectionality, if you will, is really compelling for me. And when you look into the space of purpose, what you find is a lot of people are working together because they want to, not only because they've just kind of been boxed in to say, hey, go perform, you know.
Right.
And there's something really beautiful about that, because it's people sort of joining shoulder to shoulder for a mission that's greater than themselves. And there's as you and I, and I love that you and I can talk metaphors kind of in and out of our conversation, but I think working in that way increases your wingspan, and you can do more when you have all of these people arriving in this very purposeful place, because that means that they're much more open to actually connecting to the work at hand and why the work is so important.
Yeah, I probably should comment or apologize to our listeners. I forgot in our introduction to share with you that in addition to being a change practitioner and a coach and consultant, Deirdre is also one of my favorite occupations that she has. She's a wordologist. And if you want to keep up in a conversation, you have to be able to be prepared to learn new words. You're going to learn new words. I get them every time. Today's word, ladies and gentlemen, is intersectionality. I love it. I will use it in a sentence by the end of the day.
We may make them up as we go, but that's okay.
No, that's not a made up word. Okay, so if it is, you know, words are only as good as they are communication, you know, cheats. Channels.
That's
and so
right.
The context alone, even if we don't go to the, you know, teacher and find it, the context alone absolutely expressed what you're saying in a beautiful way.
Yeah.
It just made me remember. It just made me remember your other profession. I swear I know that you had a stint at Merriam-Webster or something at some point.
Indeed. Indeed.
But one of the things that this whole purpose thing, I'm sorry, go ahead. I was really, what did you say?
No, just saying I've always had a love of words. I remember, believe it or not, as a kid saying to my mom, you know, I love words so much, I wish I could hug them. And it's just, I've been a communicator since way back. I love it. Thank you.
I've never heard that story. Again, very visual, very graphic. I so appreciate that. I completely can appreciate where that came from. I'm so not surprised to hear that. Hug a word today. That's
right.
So, but I was tracking along with the conversation in spite of being, kind of paused on the wordologist memory. This whole notion of, I think, purpose as a way to, I think, connecting it to the agenda around engagement and keeping people, excited about the work that they're doing and allowing them to show up in a very inspired way is absolutely critical part of the agenda of being able to connect them to their strengths, passions, and motivations. And so, but what I think we've also seen is where there's a pretty, so if you think about engagement in terms of, Gallup's assessment around whether people are in the workforce or either actively engaged, disengaged, or actively disengaged. I'm always fascinated to see other studies that stack up against that study that probably have a high correlation. And the group is called the Standish Group, puts out a chaos report every other year that talks about how the percentage of projects that fail. So, and the standard kind of pie chart shows that a third of projects fail, a third of the projects are challenged, and then another third are successful, which to me very closely aligns to a third of the workforce is actively engaged, another third are disengaged, and another third are actively disengaged. So, they help make each other make sense. This whole connection of engaged and project success, is that something that you've ever been really deliberate about understanding and connecting in your work? I mean, it's, especially as you've kind of been navigating a ship to, get to where it's going. And I'm sure this is one of the dashes, that, dials that you're looking at on your dashboard. Has this ever been, how does that even resonate with you, I guess is the question.
Absolutely, it does. In fact, those levers that we've been talking about, in addition to communication and clarity about the change and the vision or your why, stakeholder and employee and individual engagement is a cornerstone of this work. So studies around engagement have absolutely been at the heart of a lot of the work that we do and what I've done over the course of my career. One of the most beautiful definitions I've heard about engagement was pretty recently. It's within the last couple of weeks. And it explored the fact that engagement begins with clarity around the definition. Engagement has often been this amorphous, you're either engaged or you're not, zero-sum game sort of view that's been measured over time. But as our culture evolves and as the workplace and we as human beings evolve, it's that definition has to actually be revisited as well. And the definition that I most recently had was very simple. And it talks about engagement is comprised of three parts. One is the head, and that's intellectual engagement, you know, competency, skill development, am I stimulated by the work at hand? My heart as an employee, am I connected to the company? Where's the loyalty? Am I passionate about the relationships I have in my work? And finally, hands. And the hands piece can be left out of engagement because that also speaks to the energy, the commitment that I bring, the drive, those intangibles, and table stakes in engagement is getting the work done. You know, how often are those projects realizing the end, the results and the goals that they had from the onset. So I think that threefold definition and the beauty and the simplicity of it is really engaging, and we're integrating that in our work more readily because when we think about the definitions changing, you and I have already touched on it. It's, you know, we defined work as 9 to 5. Do I have my 9 to 5 job? Great. But
right,
if people need more flexibility, we have to expand the definition and recognize that, oh, wait, they're answering this from a different perspective. So, yeah, engagement is so critical to the heart of this. And there's one of the I'll pause with this. One of the key takeaways and the differences is this notion of employee satisfaction versus engagement.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Satisfaction is very static. I am versus not. Engagement, there's something with that head, heart, and hand that's a very kinetic thing that I can see going on in the workplace.
You know, that's so helpful, particularly as you think, you know, this whole notion of thinking about engagement as head, heart, and hand in terms of what you think, what you feel, and then what you do, that I think that people, you know, commonly can appreciate how those three things happen. You ready for this? In concert.
I love it.
How those three things happen in concert to get people to show up in a really meaningful and compelling way to the work that they're doing. You know, Deirdre, this has really been a fascinating conversation, and I'm really excited that we were able to get it on your calendar. You know, as we look to, you know, kind of close out this conversation, you know, what's on the horizon for you? I mean, what is, you know, as you think about your vision snapshot for even just a year a year from now, and you and I have definitely likely shared this quote from The Alchemist around, you know, the universe conspiring in your favor as you kind of get clear on what your purpose is. So as I invite you to be purposeful about what's going to happen for you over the next year, what kind of things can you speak into being now, just even in this conversation, that our listeners might, you know, choose to engage? Like what's next for you?
Thank you so much for the question, Reggie. It's been a true joy to be with you today as well. What's on tap as I think about that very near-term vision? It's pretty simple. There is a quote from Marianne Williams that's often attributed to Nelson Mandela that has just been recurring in my soul, and I'm thinking about it not only professionally but personally, and I invite your listeners to consider the ways that this may resonate with them. And it's the line from it that jumps out is simply, "You're playing small, doesn't serve the world." And I'm frankly challenging myself and my family and my company and my friends to really explore the places where we are either intentionally or unintentionally playing small. Because the world needs us, and it needs us in our full, most full state, our fully engaged state, our fully amazed and engaged, ready state. And I'm really just taking the training wheels off of this thing in some places. The company is, we're going to have our third birthday coming up here soon, and it's been a fantastic journey.
That's a pivotal milestone.
so we're going to be launching our blog. We have a few more speaking engagements coming up, but we're just continuing to try to invest and grow. Our clients represent the best of who we are, and I just am excited to be a part of creating this groundswell of navigating and leading change on purpose. So we're going to continue to do more of that.
Well, that is plenty exciting. Pre-birthday celebration for your three-year-old. That's so awesome. As a colleague and a friend, I could not be more excited and hopeful. We will praise it in anticipation of it, because we know it's coming, the success and the journey accomplishments that you'll be able to continue to have that are already yours, just because they've been, the vision's been written and made plain. So thank you so much for coming and joining this conversation. I absolutely enjoy our conversations. I am tickled to be able to bring it to others on this show. And with that, we will close out, and we will get on with our day after our power lunch hour. I hope everyone else is invigorated, as inspired as I am. As we close out, we'll have an opportunity to listen to Shante Khan's track, "Free Your Dream," which is, we're fortunate enough to have it as our show's theme song. And I actually understand that she is releasing a new album soon. But for now, please go and find the track "Free Your Dreams" on whatever portal that you use to purchase music. I highly recommend keeping it in the atmosphere of things that inspire you. With that, we will close out and invite you to continue to find your forte, compose your masterpiece, and play your crescendo. Have a great day, everyone.
today.